You're listening to Cinema Jaw, recorded live this week at Matt's office because Mother's, it's Thursday, and Woo-hoo! It's busy back there. You got your hosts, Matt Kabinski and...
Rye the Movie Guy, and this is one hell of a fine office you got here, Matt.
Thank you very much, Rye. I'm proud of it. I like it. It's comfy.
Yeah, you really made the accommodations just perfect for us.
Yeah, we're here in the boardroom. It's a little quieter than usual. We got... the big screen, we're at the table, we got our PBRs as tradition dictates.
Yep.
And we're ready to talk about what this week?
All right, this week we got Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore. We'll be looking at two new movies, plus a movie review in theaters in education that I checked out this weekend.
Sweet.
We had a fan request, and this is an actual fan request, texted me.
Where are these fans coming from?
This is a true story. A fan texted me and said, I got a great idea for a top 10 list. Do your top 10 favorite animated movies. Me and you are going to take a look at that.
I think that's a fantastic idea, and I'm so happy that that this is the subject this week. But I have a question here.
Yeah, please.
If this is a fan, how does he have your phone number?
Well, it's a fan that knows me, and that's why he's a fan, but he knows me first. We're also going to, instead of doing 6 degrees of separation, we are going to introduce a special guest to play trivia alongside Matt Kay in Rise Movie Trivia.
I'm excited about that. Should we say who our guest is?
Or? Yeah.
I think we're going to have Charles Klein from Film Beyond.
All right. So we're going to bring in Charles Klein later as a special guest.
Who's not here now.
No, but hopefully if he can find a parking spot and get up here in time, he is going to be here.
He's going to be here, I hear.
He is. And he will be playing movie trivia and maybe even chiming in on his favorite animated features. We're going to do some DVD reviews and finish up with Rise Hidden Gem.
Sweet.
All right. So we start off the first segment is Interested or Ignore, Eye for an Eye. Matt, a new movie coming out this week. It's hyped up a lot. Michael Jackson, This Is It, a documentary taken during his rehearsal days leading up to his comeback tour that never happened due to his untimely death. Interested or ignore?
I don't think there's a single person in the country who's not interested. There's going to be your naysayers who hate Michael Jackson because of the allegations of pedophilia or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
Which may or may not be true, I don't know. But that just makes the movie all the more interesting to kind of get a look into this guy's mind who, say what you want about him, but he was an iconic figure in the history of not only music, but culture in general.
For sure. He is not only an awesome entertainer, icon, but an interesting and intriguing man at the same time. So quite. The film, I think, is a must-see.
Yeah.
If I run out to the theater, I might not. But at some point, I'm going to come across this movie and watch it.
Yeah.
I'm also interested.
Two eyes for that one.
Two eyes for Michael Jackson's This Is It. The other big film opening up in the theater this week is Boondock Saints 2.
They couldn't come up with a more clever title than that?
No, just it's Boondock Saints 2.
Two. It's been like how many years? Since...
I want to say something like 7 years.
And it's an interesting backstory on why the sequel has taken so long. Do you know anything about it?
I don't, but start off, eye for an eye. Are you interested or are you giving this one an ignore?
Oh, big interested. But I'm a little skeptical on how it's going to do because I have to admit that I did not do the research on this, but I will because it's a very interesting backstory. And I think that the director kind of burned a lot of bridges in Hollywood after he made the first film, which was a hit, at least an underground hit, burned a lot of bridges in Hollywood, pretty much made himself into a pariah. And that's why it's taken so long to get the second one made.
Interesting. I saw the first one. Like a lot of people on DVD because it was sort of a cult classic.
Yeah.
It started getting a following, and
right.
I checked it out. Good movie. I think the second one is just going to sort of bomb. I think it's...
I got that. I have a sneaky suspicion myself.
Yeah. Something's itching me on the side of the head, and it's saying, stay away from this, Ryan. I'm giving this one an ignore. All right. That brings us to...
The all-new sound effect.
Oh, boy. We are loaded with... sound effects over here.
You know, and I want to comment that we don't use digital sound effects. These are all practical, old school radio items.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Movie review in theaters that I was able to check out this week. I don't know if you were able to get out to the theater.
No, once again, the two-year-old prevents me from going to the theater very much.
I had touched on this movie in the segment Eye for an Eye last week, and it was the small independent film called An Education. And on this date, I believe this is October 29th, I am happy to announce An Education is my movie of the year thus far.
Wow.
Fantastic film. Again, it was Carey Mulligan. She's a newcomer. She plays like a teenage English, an English teenager in suburban London. 1961, she's 16 years old, and she's studying very hard to go to Cambridge. And the family's pushing for that because they want her to have this culture, you know, understanding of culture, be educated. Yeah. And they're pushing for that so that she has a good life when she grows up. But then when what happens is when she meets this like playboy who's almost twice her age, who's played by Peter Sarsgaard, he clearly has money and is living that lifestyle, but he was never given that education and brought up that way to ever really fully understand the culture that he's involved in.
So he's lower class.
He's lower class, but he's living, trying to live the high class life because he has the money. But she, when she goes out with him, is actually of that class. She understands when they go and they buy a painting, how special that painting is and who painted the painting. They're just buying it because, hey, it's a lot of money and it would look cool in my place.
Right.
And so it's very interesting how you sort of see that really, and bringing a kid up with the right education and giving them culture is so vitally important to fulfillment in life. And eventually she gets her heart broken and things go one way and the other, and you go through the whole trials and tribulations. Things do sort of work out for her, and it's just a strong piece, very strong piece.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah,
Did you get a higher education? Did you go to college?
I did go to college.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Illinois State University.
What was your major?
It was communications and business administration.
It's obviously the communications aspect is working out for you.
And some business administration comes in handy every once in a while.
You know, it's funny because the couple in this movie sound a lot like us because I did not go to college. So I'm that schlub who doesn't have the culture, and you're the fine wine taster.
I don't know about it. I am a wine taster. I don't know how far I'd go along with that. Also in the movie is Alfred Molina, who is...
Oh, I love him.
He's a fantastic actor.
Yeah, Dr. Octopus.
And he's Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
He plays such a fantastic role as her father in the movie. He sort of gets almost duped and like swept off his feet by Peter Sarsgaard, who's always trying to come pick up his daughter. And he's just selling him on... You know, how he can bring his daughter over to Paris and meet, who's the guy who wrote Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, C.S. Lewis. And it goes on, and he's almost more swept off his feet by Sarsgaard than the girl is. And he plays fantastic. I could see Academy Award nominations, at least for the movie.
For the movie?
Alfred Molina, and definitely for this Carey Mulligan.
Really? I think it would be great if he won an Academy Award. And you know where we were first introduced to him? I think you probably know this.
Go ahead.
This is touching.
Enlighten me.
This is touching on our trivia
segment.
Yes, I'll give you a hint. Throw me the idol.
Indiana Jones.
Yes, the first Indiana Jones. Yes. Right before the boulder starts rolling.
Yeah,
throw me the idol, and then shortly thereafter, Indy comes across his dead body.
Oh man, fantastic! Yeah. He's a great character actor. He pops up in small roles all the time. And especially since Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Well, now you spot him as Doc Ock. It's like, oh, here he is.
There
he is. So, but check it out if you get a chance. It's opening up wider and wider. They're rolling it out slowly, so it was only in a few theaters this weekend. Next weekend, this coming weekend, it'll be open up in even more theaters. So, in education, my movie of the year as of October 29th.
I'm going to go see it.
Yeah. So, that brings us to a fun segment that, like I said, a fan wrote in and said, you guys have been doing some awesome, just awesome top 10 lists. How about turning an eye towards animation and giving us a list of your top 10 favorite animated movies?
You know, and I would say, after horror, animation is probably my favorite genre.
Oh, wow. Matt.
Definitely.
So this is another foaming at the mouth episode for you.
Foaming at the mouth, for sure.
Now, we've been trying to cut back on the top 10 lists as far as going so far in depth. Sometimes we get carried away.
Yeah.
And 45 minutes into it, you're just going over your number 7.
Right.
So what we've decided to do is stick by the rules. And our new format, 10 through 6, the bottom half of our top 10 lists, will just sort of be run through.
Just like that.
And there'll be bells ringing, and it's going to be sort of a speed round.
Okay.
If you list a movie that's on my top 5, I won't say anything until we get to my top 5, vice versa.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I've been starting left and right with all the horror genres we've been doing, so why don't you take a stab and start us off with your number 10, Matt?
Okay. My number 10 is Spirited Away. You know, I didn't do any of the research. I can't even remember the director's name.
That's okay. You're not supposed to. It's actually... Hayao Miyazaki.
Yeah, it was a fantastic film. Loved it. Visually stunning. What's your number 10?
Number 10, I have the classic Cinderella.
Beautiful Disney film.
Beautiful Disney film, and I felt that I had to put it on there. There's so many great animated films, but for some reason I just felt like somebody has to have a Cinderella on a top 10 list if we're going to be talking about animation.
It's hard to leave the Disney classics off.
Yeah. Number 9 for you, Matt?
9 for me. The Brave Little Toaster.
Have never heard of it.
You've never heard of that film?
No.
Oh, my God. It's fantastic. It's about, as the title kind of gives away, a brave little toaster, and they're searching for their lost friend who was sent to the dump. So they all escape the household. Their anthropomorphic household appliances. There's a toaster, a vacuum, yada, yada. And they go on this journey, a hero's journey. And the toaster, even though he's the smallest, winds up being the one who really saves the day.
Oh, wow.
It's great.
Any Pop-Tarts in the movie?
No Pop-Tarts. You'll have to watch it and see.
At number 9, I have Fox and the Hound.
Oh, yeah.
I saw this when I was a little kid, and I cried. I remember just being tore up as a little Ryan there. Fantastic movie. Is it another Disney? It must be another Disney.
Yes, it is another Disney.
Who else was making animated pictures back then?
There were some other studios.
Yeah, but mainly Disney.
Disney was definitely the juggernaut.
That one came out in 1981, Fox and a Hound. You're number 8?
I saw Fox and the Hound in the theater, by the way.
So did I. Interesting.
I was with my mom, naturally, because I was a child. My number 8 is a trilogy, actually a quadrilogy, but these must be viewed together. They are one solid unit.
Okay.
And is The Lord of the Rings, including The Hobbit, animated.
Very good. I forgot all about it, actually, and didn't put it on my list. I love The Hobbit.
It's amazing. But years before Peter Jackson, the animated feature Lord of the Rings, and I know it's also one of Charles Klein's favorite, and maybe he can comment that on that when we get to the top 5.
Yeah, and in fact, I believe he's coming up now. So when he gets here, maybe we'll ask him if he's got a thought on his top 5.
He'll get here sooner or later. He's not in the room.
At number 8, I have a Pixar film, The Incredibles.
Good movie. I love the superhero motif.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Pixar, and we're going to see that more as we go down my list. I love Pixar. I love the 3D animated computer animation.
Yeah.
And The Incredibles was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. The Incredibles is good. I actually have a little bit of a personal story around The Incredibles. I'll keep it brief. I put out a comic book called Superbia. Mm-hmm. And coincidentally, you know, it's funny because I get a lot of my ideas. Like, it seems like I think of something and then all of a sudden it's in the zeitgeist or whatever. And you see it on a major motion picture.
Yeah.
You know, and in my comic book, Superbia, there's a scene where the dad, it's about a superhero family, and the dad's lifting the couch so the mom can
vacuum.
Yeah. And this was 2 years or so before the movie, which, is documentable. It's proven.
Wow.
Yeah. Published 2 years before the movie. They stole it from me. God damn it.
That is incredible.
So where does that bring us?
That puts us at your number 7.
Also a Pixar film.
Okay.
Toy Story, the original.
Wow, we're going to touch on that one when we get to my top 5, so we'll just leave it there. My number 7, I have Akira.
Akira is also on my top 5, so we can
touch on that when you get to it.
Yep.
Akira!
Tetsuo!
We're going to have fun with this. Number 6, Matt?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Ooh, very interesting.
Yes. You can't talk about animated films and not throw this there on the list.
Yep. I have at number 6 The Lion King.
Also a very good movie.
And a good musical, if you've seen it in the theater.
And also, I want to throw in, I know our top 10 lists last forever, but if we do have time after we do our top 10 list, I don't know if you've heard about this phenomenon. It's kind of like an urban legend about the Easter eggs that some of the animators hide in these films. Are you familiar with this?
A little bit, but you're talking about actually in the feature film. There'll be stuff hidden, drawn.
Yeah, sometimes it's drawn, sometimes it's audio, and some of them are complete BS, but some of them are really real, and some of them are actually somewhat perverse.
Yeah.
They're always pretty funny.
I could see that, because I actually, one time on the episode where Mr. Burns got shot in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
You familiar? It was a two-parter, sort of like Who Shot J.R.
I thought it was like a five-parter.
So, for some reason, I'm in college, I'm getting boozed up every night, and I'm sitting in my dorm, and they're talking about how there's going to be hidden features, hidden things inside the episode that'll give you an idea who shot him. So I actually taped the episode, and while drinking, put it on slow-mo and watched the entire episode in slow-mo.
How long did it take?
I didn't time it, unfortunately. But a long
estimate.
Time. I would say almost 2 hours.
Jesus, man, okay. For a half an hour episode?
But what was hilarious, though, at one point, on just one of those like wide shots when they're coming into the elementary school, They were doing construction on the elementary school earlier in the episode, and then later on they're coming in as a wide shot, and sort of that gutter that they use to throw garbage down during a construction, like a chute, was turned into a giant penis.
Really?
And now when you're watching in full motion, you don't see this at all. I mean, it just comes on and goes right away. But watching in slow motion where you got about 6 frames before it goes into the thing, I'm like, oh, my God.
It was an unmistakable phallus. This was not your overactive imagination.
No. Wow. Unbelievable. So we'll have to touch more on some hidden Easter eggs inside the animated.
I got a big list of them, so let's talk about it.
So Charles has arrived.
Hey, Charles Klein.
Let's get his mic going.
Man, parking is awful around here. Let me tell you what.
Did you end up finding a spot, or did you valet?
I did. I found a spot. It was a nice man took my car away.
Sweet.
So hopefully I get it back.
Interesting.
It's a good neighborhood.
So welcome to Cinema Jaw.
How we doing?
Doing pretty good.
What are we talking about?
Well, we should talk about you for at least a minute. And
yeah, let's introduce Charles Klein. Go ahead, Matt. You've known him longer.
Yeah, Charles is one of my very close friends, and I'll just say that he's also the co-host of the Indie Incubator Film Festival, which we do at the Original Mothers. Charles has been involved with that since the beginning, but you also do movies, right?
Yeah, I did a few movies.
Like what?
Like short films. I've done a few. I did one called the Bleakest, which was pretty successful, I think, just for a short DV film.
Yeah.
I think we did pretty well with it.
Pretty good.
Which Matt had a great actually acting job in it.
I was going to say, you had a pretty good leading man there.
I did. I had my own Bruce Campbell that day, you know.
Sweet. Thank you.
Also one of Charles's leading men in Brain.
True story. True story.
That's right. Actually, we both acted for Charles.
Unbelievable.
The last one I did, which was like 3 years ago, was Ryan. And,
yeah.
Two years ago. Mm-hmm. Did an excellent job, too. Just, you know.
Was that Brain? It was only 2 years ago? I think it was like 3 years ago, wasn't it?
It could have been four.
Yeah. Who knows?
I have no idea what's going on.
Charles, we're ready for another Charles Klein Film Beyond production.
We're ready. It's coming. It's coming soon. A couple things in the works. Still trying to, you know, still we're working on the Bleakest feature, which we're just trying to hammer down, but we want to make sure it's really good before we get into it.
Yes, so, which I will not be reprising my role as Bleak.
I don't, maybe.
I'm letting that cat out of the bag.
Okay.
It's fine for me. I'd like to get a cameo and maybe step behind the camera. But anyway, Charles Klein is a great director, good friend of ours.
And he's a film nut. He watches a lot of films. He directs films. So that's why we decided to have you as the first official guest of Cinema Jaw.
I'm honored. Totally honored to be here.
Now, right before you walked into the room, we were going over our top 10 list of favorite animated features. And to catch you up to speed, quick fire, Matt's going to give his 10 through 6 that he already mentioned.
All right,
Matt.
Let me hear him. Okay.
I'll just read them. 10 through 6. Number 10, Spirited Away. Number 9, The Brave Little Toaster. Number 8, The Lord of the Rings trilogy, including The Hobbit. Number 7, Toy Story. 6, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Very good list, would you not say?
I would say it's a good list. Would you categorize Roger Rabbit as an animated film?
You know what? When doing the research, it was on most of the top lists that I looked at when picking my own top list.
Okay.
And I think that the animation portion of the movie is so integral to the functionality of it as a story that it is absolutely an animated feature.
Okay.
Exactly. Just what he said. I would also qualify it as an animated feature.
I might, you know, it's good because you could branch off into a subgenre of animated you know, live action
the
films.
Mix.
Yeah.
I would say that.
How about Kill Bill, that animated feature in Kill Bill?
Oh, amazing. The Animatrix is another one.
I love that part.
Exactly.
And then there's rotoscope animation, which is where they animate actually over live
action. You
look
like Beowulf and what Zemeckis is doing now.
Oh, yeah.
With all this stuff. He's got Christmas Carol coming out.
Beowulf is
your 2 year old would
one.
Probably like that, Matt, maybe.
Yeah. So, and also to catch up to speed, my 10 through 6 is as follows: Cinderella, Fox and the Hound, The Incredibles, Akira, The Lion King.
I like it. You know, I was listening while I was finding parking. I was listening to Cinema Jaw in the car.
Amazing.
You know, live from my car. And I heard that both of you saw Fox and the Hound on the big screen.
Yes.
And I find that great because I loved the movie, but I was like 2 years old.
Yeah, it came out in 1981.
Wait, did you say you were 2 years old?
You said it came out in 81?
Yeah. 1981. I
was born in 79. I'm just a young man. Wow. He's a young man.
Wow, I had no idea he was that much younger than us.
That's amazing. Because
I look so
old. You can
old.
Leave now.
Yeah. Here we go. So that brings us to me and Matt's top five.
Okay.
And can you throw
yeah,
in on this?
Yeah, I'm going to chime in. I was thinking about it while I was in the car.
And now you can have the honor of going first with your number five, your fifth favorite, or you can throw it over to Matt or myself who, if you don't feel comfortable.
Can I do ties? Does it matter?
Ties? What do you mean?
Ties, like a tie for five?
Right, a tie for five. Go ahead. All throw right. us. Tie See, you're bringing in a new guest, Matt, and I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah, he throws us a curve. All right,
away. I'm going for a tie for five. These are my only Disney films on the list. It's Sleeping Beauty,
okay.
which was done in a great medieval style, great animation. Aladdin.
Okay.
I got number four.
Whoa. You stop right there. We're going through now.
Okay.
So that's what you got at five.
Yeah, at five. It's a tie. Disney tie.
We're gonna stop and discuss each film as we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your number five is Aladdin?
Yes.
And Sleeping Beauty.
He's that's, got a tie. That's a tie.
It's a tie.
Which would you put above?
Sleeping Beauty, just for pure
but
old school animation.
Aladdin really
I did.
Bad.
I did for a couple of reasons. I just remember being really good, and it was okay to you'd talk about it at school, be like, I saw Aladdin. You were like 11 or something. Mm-hmm. It was okay. So we all went and saw it, and then I remember later you were talking about graphic things that you could Easter eggs inside animated films. And I remember Aladdin had a good one when the princess was talking to the tiger and the tiger dropped down and in the mist of the sand, because it was a desert film.
You're getting it mixed up.
It would just say sex.
Nope.
Was that a different Disney film?
Yes.
Okay. It's dropped from my top five list. What is it?
No, but there is an Easter egg in Aladdin and it's just about that scene you were talking about.
It wasn't sex though, right?
No, that was in The Lion King. When Mustafa or what's the character's name? The Lion King's dad.
Mustafa.
Yeah, who's voiced
by
James
Ooh.
Earl Jones.
Yeah.
When he falls off the cliff and dies, it's sort of a sad point in the movie. The puff of smoke that comes up spells the word sex. And they've later tried to say it's actually SFX, which is the special effects department of Disney's. But that's BS. I mean, come on. You can clearly see the bottom line on the E. It's sex.
It's bullshit. You're right. Yeah,
it is total bullshit.
Was there one
myself.
In Aladdin, too?
There is one in Aladdin.
What is the Aladdin one?
The Aladdin one is when he turns into the genie turns into a bee, and Aladdin is climbing up the balcony to go to Princess Jasmine's room.
Okay.
And he's afraid to talk to her, and he turns into a bee to say, be yourself. That
I do.
And anyway.
Okay.
There is a, if you turn it up really loud, you can hear them clearly, and it's Aladdin's voice from what I can hear, say, all good teenagers, take off your clothes. And as soon as somebody told me that, I called bullshit on them. I'm like, no way. So I went to my cabinet, pulled out my copy of Aladdin, threw it in, queued it up to that moment, clear as day, I heard those words.
And then you took off your clothes.
What's interesting about
and then
these,
the pizza guy came to the
what's
door.
Interesting about these stories is it's made me want to go check out these movies right away. I'm like,
yeah,
wow,
yeah,
I gotta go put on Aladdin. I gotta go see The Lion King and see if this is really there.
And besides that, Aladdin was an excellent movie.
Is
a lot of fun.
Song
Jafar, great
how about
villain.
The song? A Whole New World.
Yeah, and you got Robin Williams as the genie. Mm-hmm. You Never Had a Friend Like Me. Just hilarious.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Okay, so as long as we're talking about this, I did a little research on Snopes, which is pretty much the debunker website online. Have you ever heard of it?
Never heard of it.
Like all those crappy fake emails you get, this is a real video, but you're like, oh, really? Elephants can fly? You check it out on Snopes, and that's where you get the true story.
Okay.
And that one is actually contestable. They're saying that although you can hear, it sounds to me like, good teenagers take off their clothes. That's the words I hear. They're saying if you're told what to listen for, that's what you're going to hear. But let me tell you something. I heard it. So listeners to CinemaJaw, please go fire up your copy of Aladdin and let us know what you think at CinemaJaw.com.
Awesome. All right. That brings us to number five on your list, Matt. What did you have?
Number five on my list is a film that I first saw when Charles Klein lent it to me.
Okay.
And it's Wizards.
Ooh.
Have you ever seen it?
I have not. Charles doesn't like me so much to lend me Wizards.
Did I ever give it back to you?
Yeah, I did find it I found it in a pile somewhere.
I think
I still have the case.
It.
You have the case, but I have the disc. You should have a Wizards party. You should see this movie.
It's good, huh?
Yeah, I think I recommended it to you once.
You should watch it. It's kind of trippy. It's done by Ralph Bakshi, okay. And I'm probably mispronouncing his name, but he's most famous for Fritz the Cat, which is I think it was X-rated, but really when you watch it today, it's pretty tame. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, it's not very graphic. Anyway, it's a cult classic. It didn't do well in the theater. Well, it made about $9 million, but which was great for an animated film at the time, but not stellar. Mm-hmm. It was way under like the Disney movies and stuff like that. But it's kind of about the story of this post-apocalyptic world, and there's fairies and elves and dwarves, and there's this big struggle, and there's a wizard and a scantily clad princess, and it's an adventure story, and there's some sci-fi elements to it. It's a romp. It's really good.
Wizards.
Yes.
I'm going to have to
check
this one out.
You should.
My number five is from 2001, and it's probably the most famous animated movie about a fish.
Oh, okay, I know it.
Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Overall, I just loved Ellen DeGeneres in there. Thought it was funny. She's always...
It's probably the only Ellen DeGeneres role that I actually do like.
I agree. I'm not overall... You
perfect.
Know,
perfect. She was perfect.
Yeah.
I don't know what other movies she's in. I know her from her TV shows. I don't know if she's been in a ton of movies. But what a great character. Dory, she's forgetting everything. Just keep swimming. I thought the overall authentic characters in the movie, the animation is great.
Yeah.
Underwater. I just loved all the fish. You know, the shark. You had the stingray.
Great. The turtles.
The turtles were fantastic.
Yeah.
They were like little stoner turtles.
The fish in the pet store.
Yeah. That would
or the dentist office.
The dentist office. Great animation. Good story, and again, it follows that story of Disney where you always hear that the character grows up without a mother and is separated from the dad. Am I right on this?
Right, right.
It's a theme.
It is.
Yeah, like Bambi. Was kind of like the start
the
of it.
King.
The Lion King.
Dumbo?
The Fox and the Hound. They're very good at like a – Disney's just very well at movies that – where you're just trying to find your place in the world, and it's really good, you know, when that lead character is, you know, in their own place in the world, you know, without a father or mother, and they're just really good at, like, that world that they create, and, like, you know, just, you'll meet friends, you'll get through, and it's just a really good sunny thing, you know, for
kids. I don't know, I mean,
and
for me, it made it a little more difficult to relate, because, you know, I had thankfully I had a good home with
right.
my mom and dad there. So maybe it was, for me, it was more difficult to relate to the films because you're right. They were always about like orphans
yeah.
for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that makes.
You know, I don't have many Disney films on my list. You know, I have Aladdin, which maybe, I don't know why, The Loner and Sleeping Beauty. But like, I agree. Like, I had like, you know, a nice upbringing. I really loving home. And I think we watched a lot of Disney films because, you know, that's what you did when you were a kid.
Yeah.
But I didn't love them, you know, the way.
Yeah, same here.
But I always thought, like, the broad picture of it was really good. And mm-hmm. they always send home a nice message.
They do.
You know?
It always tidies up at the end with a very strong message.
As long as we're going off on this tangent.
Love,
is there a
friends,
bad Disney ending?
Family.
Is there a Disney
no,
ending with
but
a bad...
No, that's kind of what pisses me off. It doesn't piss me off because it's hard to be pissed off at a Disney movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when I put on my critical hat
yeah.
and I stand back a bit as an adult, I get a little... Not angry, but saddened that they're taking these hundreds of years ancient tales that mm-hmm. we've been telling verbally and passing down like Grimm's fairy tales
right.
and et cetera, and basically not dumbing them down, but happifying them, if that's a word.
Yeah.
That's getting a little new. You know,
like The Little Mermaid, the original story, is pretty freaking sad. Like, it's not a happy ending. And same thing with Hunchback of Notre Dame. That's a tragedy.
Well, most of Grimm's fairy tales are. I mean, like in Cinderella was your favorite Disney film
mm-hmm.
when they're trying the shoes on the slipper.
Mm-hmm.
I think they cut them off, don't they? And like,
well, the sisters like chop their mutilate their own feet to
fit the shoe.
Right. Yeah.
yeah.
They leave a
much
lot
darker image than Disney wants
right.
you to see.
Right.
Yeah, and I'd like to see if Disney is going to take a stab at these ancient like classics, if you will. I mean, they're so old you can't even call them classics. Then let's see one that where it stays a little truer to the subject matter and has some balls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to see.
Yeah.
So that brings us to number four. We throw it back to Charles Klein. Number four on your list.
Okay, I'm going to go with, Wizards for Bashki. That was my number four also.
Okay.
I like Ralph Bashke a lot. I have another one in my top five list. So, it, you know, Matt explained the plot of Wizards. Yeah. I love it. It's a mix of fantasy. The animation style is really cool. You know, he used to do some early rotoscoping too. So
yeah, rotoscope animation.
So all my I can point say is mute on that one.
Yeah.
All I could say is if Wizards pops up two times on the, this esteemed top 10 list that we're doing here, it's a must see.
Absolutely,
yeah,
must see.
Yeah, definitely go see it.
Matt, you're number four.
Hang on, let me. Oh, my number four is one of my favorite movies from childhood, and I have to admit that I haven't seen it in at least 12 years, maybe okay. more. The Phantom Tollbooth.
Never heard of it, Charles.
Really? You know, I've heard of the book, okay. and I like remember yeah. my sister reading it, and it was on like lists, and it was always checked out of the like, you know, second grade library. People were reading it, but mm-hmm. I didn't know they made an animated
oh,
film.
Oh, it's
of it.
Great animated film. It's another one that's a mix of live action and animation, but this one, it's only live action in the very beginning.
Okay.
And it is based on Norton Juster's book, which came out in the 60s, The Phantom Tollbooth. And anyway, this kid, I think his name's Milo, I can't remember, it's been so long, gets this package.
Mm-hmm.
And so he opens it, and he's sort of this lonely... you know, sort of adjusting to living in San Francisco and not having a lot of friends. And anyway, this package has this toll booth and a little toy car in it. So he goes in, he gets in the car and he goes to the toll booth. Turns out it's a portal to another dimension where everything's animated.
Okay.
And this all happens within the first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to go and free the princesses of rhyme and reason that have been banished from the land. And there's one city's Digitopolis and one is Dictionopolis. So there's a lot of learning in here,
mm-hmm.
but it's an acid trip.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like it.
He gets caught in the doldrums, and literally that's a place in the movie. You got to see this to believe it. It's a great,
great
movie.
What year did this come out?
It came out in, let me see here, 1970.
Okay.
And it was the first animated feature released by MGM, who their second one was The Secret of Nim. 12 years later.
Wow.
Which isn't on my list, but is yeah, one of my yeah, favorites yeah. also, and actually gets
excellent,
an honorable
excellent.
Mention.
Secret of Nim yeah. is an excellent film.
Yeah, one of my favorites growing up, for sure. But Phantom Tollbooth.
I'm going to have to check this out.
I would go to the video store and rent that like every other weekend. I would make my mom rent it for
Wear
me.
Wear the tape out.
I totally did.
You know, speaking of Halloween, you know what reminded me of The Secret of Nim? I watched a movie the other night called I Am Legend,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a very underrated film.
The Will
film.
Smith one?
The Will Smith movie.
I didn't care for the picture.
Eh.
I liked it, but, you know, I the rats he used just looked just like the rats of Nim, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's almost like a subtle reference. It was really good. Like the rats in cages, and they made them like bloodthirsty and crazy.
I'll have
it
to
very
rewatch
good,
that.
Yes, it's a very good film.
All right, my number four was a movie Matt touched on in his bottom five that we sort of went through very quick, and that is the 2001 masterpiece, Spirited Away.
Brilliant.
I love this movie. Again, it's got that like trippy feeling because there's so much going on in the movie. This little girl, her name, I'm just going to butcher it, is Chihino, and her parents. They basically are at an amusement park that seems to be abandoned.
Right.
And the parents end up eating this food that turns them into pigs.
Right.
And now she goes into this sort of secret world
yeah.
to try to figure out how to get her parents back
right
and get out of the amusement park
mm-hmm.
and just so many like weird things, but not weird in the sense where you don't understand what's going on. The story as a whole completely makes sense, but it's out there. It's like
yeah.
wow, I just praise the movie for the creativity. It's like this is
it keeps adding
layers
yeah
right? It what a fantastic movie. Spirited Away, it might have won the Academy Award for Best Animated Film.
I believe it did.
Yeah.
Excellent movie. That movie is outstanding. Anything Miyazaki touches
He is like an animation legend.
Am I next?
New one. Am I next?
Yeah, you are coming up next.
It's a good...
Okay. The other tidbit I had about it, Spirited Away became Japan's highest grossing movie of all time.
It's their Titanic.
It's wow. their Titanic.
And you
it
know what?
Top Titanic for their highest grossing film in Japan.
Really?
Yeah.
That's, you know.
They love it over there. And, of course, over here, and I don't know if you've saw it on DVD, they give you a chance to watch it with American actors voicing the characters. I did not choose that. I went with the Japanese and read the subtitles.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like, it did get kind of big over here, though.
See, it did.
And that's,
it did.
It did.
Yeah, well, I saw it at the Century Mall Theater.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also did Howl's Moving Castle. Is that on one of your lists?
It isn't, but I have another one of them on my list. That's why I loved Howl's Moving Castle
yeah, as well.
Yeah, great, great movie.
But by putting Spirited on the Way, that's sort of my nod to him. So
You know what? Before we go on, this is what I was talking about before, like where that couple from the movie.
Yeah.
I watched it dubbed American actors. And to tell you the truth, I prefer that. I want to, especially in an animated film, I don't want to have to look to the bottom of the screen to read because I want to take in as much of the eye candy as I possibly can.
I appreciate that. I never really thought about it that way. But the problem I have is, especially in an animated movie from Japan where it just doesn't fit the voice.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes me out of the movie.
I mean,
this isn't an episode of
Speed Racer, you know, where they're like, I love you very much. Yes, I do. Ha, ha, ha. You know?
But to have like maybe a Cameron Diaz with voicing a little, you know, Japanese.
All right,
girl,
I think it's gonna take me out of it. I agree too because like it, think of a Disney movie, okay? Like they had this role, or like a DreamWorks film. You know, they had these roles set out for these these actors and for a purpose because they were good at those characters,
right?
So like that's their performance in it. It matches what you see on film, I think, a little bit better. Or
yes,
you're
right. There is something there, but when it's all like. You know, clicks and whistles to me, I'd rather hear a language that I understand.
I disagree. I disagree also.
And a lot of people complain about subtitles. For me, once it starts 2 minutes in, I almost forget I'm watching a movie with subtitles. It just comes as natural as just watching a normal movie.
It's an adjustment of watching the movie. If you try to put the English overdub on and you try to watch it, it's just the most ridiculous thing you've seen.
I thought the English overdub, because in the theater, it was in English when I went to see it, and it was fine. I didn't even notice.
That's a shame. They probably didn't even give you a choice in the theater here.
They probably just
gave you the American voices.
On a side note, Miyazaki just did a new film, I think, with Disney.
Yeah, so, it's Pongo, right?
Yes, yeah. So they have like an intention now to make it for two,
right?
You know, two audiences.
Right, that one just
two
came
markets.
Out
yeah, exactly.
Interesting. All right, so that brings us to number three on the greatest, or our should say, our favorite animated features. Charles, go ahead.
You know what? It was a segment. Miyazaki. I'm going to do it right now. Princess Mononoke. If you've ever seen that one,
I haven't seen it yet.
Which is an excellent film.
I hear it's a masterpiece.
It's really good. It's really bizarre. Like most of his other films, you know, they're not very, you know, they're not very easy to swallow. You know, very for kids. It has a good. I hate to say green message now, but it really does have a good green message and not a stupid green message. I can't understand. I could not tell you the plot if I wanted to right now, unless I had a. You know, a Wikipedia. I don't know if Al Gore would approve. It's pretty trippy too. Like most really good animated.
Well, he invented
films.
The internet, so
he did. He did. This is yeah, exactly. But I just remember some of the animation. You know, it has to deal with like tree creatures and tree spirits and everything has a spirit. And
that is very green.
It's just it's a very good movie.
Interesting.
That's sorry
it's,
for the
it's
shitty
on, it's
explanation.
It's in my queue on Netflix.
Hey, that's okay. That's okay. This is your first cinema job.
Yeah, check it out.
That brings us to number three on your list, Matt.
One of my favorite movies of all time, actually. This is a cross-genre movie. The Nightmare Before Christmas.
I was not sure if I could put it on the animated list.
Why? Because it's practical animation. It's still things that are being animated. It's not live people acting.
Well, we still got two to go.
He sold me in one sentence there. I agree. Put it on the list now.
Yeah, okay. It's called
because
stop
I have one
animation.
Up that I know is not.
Can we call an audible now and throw one in there?
If you want to make a scratch on your sheet, go ahead and make your scratch.
Or you can just
now.
Throw one in now. What's the greatest stop motion movie? I would say Coraline.
Coraline is up there.
Coraline was very good.
Yeah, that actually was one of my other honorable mentions. But Coraline also used computer effects to enhance their stop motion. So is it a pure stop motion movie? Up for debate.
It's a bit much.
Let's not get too far off the list. Finish up what you were going to say about The Corpse's Bride.
No, it wasn't Corpse's Bride.
I'm sorry.
Which was another amazing film.
The Nightmare Before Christmas.
The Nightmare Before Christmas pretty much
Kabindi.
Brought stop animation back because it's so complex. You have to literally move something a quarter of a fraction of an inch, take a picture. Move it again another quarter of a fraction of an inch, take a picture. It takes so long to produce one of these movies. And this one was so epic and done on such a scale that it was never before seen.
I love Robot Chicken. I think it's a good show. The style is awesome. And I love Tim Burton. Nightmare Before Christmas. I watch it every Halloween and Christmas. Corpse Bride is great.
Yeah,
it's an excellent movie.
We had touched on Nightmare. When we started Cinema Jaw, the first film we ever reviewed, I went and checked out Nine, and that was sort of that post-apocalyptic,
right,
animated, dark, and we were
was
talking
it good?
About,
did you both see it?
Nine? No, I haven't seen it yet, but I saw the short that led up to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was that stop motion or was it computer?
No, it's computer.
No, it's computer, but it's
done in the same style.
Yeah, done in that style, and actually the movie wasn't all that good, but I love when we talked on that Cinema Jaw about how much we love like that dark animation that Tim Burton just nails with those two pictures.
Yeah, and I also picked up on a theme in that first episode.
Okay.
In every Tim Burton movie, and check this out, this is absolutely true. You will find things that are stitched together by hand, like held together. And I don't know why that's reoccurring. Like Corpse Bride, she's like literally stitched together. In Nightmare Before Christmas, the character Sally is the rag doll who keeps falling apart. Edward Scissorhands. Even the Batman films, like the Catwoman's costume is stitched together.
Interesting style.
Yeah,
very interesting. Coraline, it starts off with a beautiful animation of a stitch.
Yeah,
it does.
Frankenweenie?
I haven't seen it.
All right, that brings us to my number three, which is a green movie like Charles had on his number three, and that's the 2008 robot movie WALL-E.
Haven't seen it.
WALL-E.
It's sci-fi. It's a love story. There is very little talking in the movie. WALL-E cannot communicate, nor can what's the other robot's name?
WALL-E and the other one. What's the female?
The
type
female is.
Bot.
Well, I can't think of it right.
And
he says it. He does. He does.
About 400 times
WALL-E
in the movie.
Yeah, and so they can't really talk. Which makes it that much more interesting because it almost has like a silent film feel in the very beginning. There's a lot of comedy driven by just the action of the characters. And how good the animation has to be to know what WALL-E's thinking, feeling at the time, all inside this like little robot. But the animation is so strong.
Well, it's Pixar.
It's Pixar. And this just was their most polished as far as looking, sounding. Of course, Earth at that point, humans have basically just trashed Earth is the idea, and there's so much garbage that they can't live here anymore. So they take off in sort of a rocket ship / safe haven where they can fly around in space and live on this humongous ship and eat all they want. And sort of shows
Eva.
Like, Eva, yes, Eva. That's the female robot's name. And sort of shows how the human race is sort of not evolved, but devolved in a sense that they can't walk anymore. They're fat. It's the way all.
And the robots do all the work.
Yes. Yeah. And so, of course, it has a happy ending. It's a love story. Like I said, it works on the sci-fi level. I've seen it now probably about 4 or 5 times, and I know it came out a year ago. I love WALL-E.
I have an interesting thing about WALL-E. So the first time I saw it, I had my wife, sister in town with her 3 kids and her husband, and, you know, in our little 2-bedroom Chicago apartment. So they all spend the night. It's movie night. So, you know, what do you get for everybody? You know, Pixar, WALL-E, great. Mm-hmm. The adults loved it.
The kids hated it.
Kids hated it. They were bored as shit.
Yeah. Wow. And I saw it in the theater. Yeah.
Yeah, you can swear.
You can swear. I saw it in the theater, and I remember the kids just, like, rolling their eyes. It's not for kids. I mean.
Really?
Again, the robots aren't talking. They're not really picking up on that
right.
subtle
yeah.
entertainment value that's going on. And they're not picking up on how deep the story is, too, about, like, you know, the human race leaving Earth.
Right.
So this isn't a kid's movie.
No. Yeah, you haven't seen this?
No, I haven't seen it.
You know, Pixar's really good at making, you know, just two robots who don't have any dialogue have such, like, a yearning for each other. And you're actually watching. You're like, oh, you know, he misses the Eva robot.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, my God, it's so sad.
It is. And it has such a touching ending. It's a fantastic movie. Check it out, Matt.
I will. It's on my list.
That brings us to number two, Charles. Number two.
Number
two. We're getting up there.
I have a Bashki movie, another one.
Bashki this, Bashki that.
Yeah. Ralph Bashki, if you haven't heard of him before, this movie called American Pop, which I really enjoyed. I don't know if any of you have ever seen this
before. You were, before we started doing the top five, you had said that Reno was probably going to be a big fan of American Pop.
Yeah, have you heard of like Heavy Traffic or same guy who did Fritz the Cat? I was
no.
All right. I
don't know.
See, I was wondering. These movies came out in like the 70s, you know, mm-hmm. and I wasn't in existence yet. But like watching
again,
them now,
the
I just
age thing.
I just
really
I just
rubbing it in.
Well, I couldn't see the movie. I'm just, I am the youngest person in the room. Everybody, it's all I got. Here we go.
Okay,
yeah.
So these movies were like in the 70s, but Bashki was really, He worked for a studio. Did you do any research on the man?
Yeah. Oh. A little bit. Just
I think he worked for like Warner Brothers or Disney or something like that. He might have did like Bugs Bunny, but whatever studio he was working for, supposedly he wanted to get out and really do like adult animated films. So you got American Pop, which it talks about, you know, a person growing up, I think in the 60s and going through different styles, and it jumps from, you know, the man being 15 to 25 and then to older. And it's not done in, like, a linear story format, too. So it's a little avant-garde. It's really good. There's a lot of good jazz music in it, just like any Bashki movie. Like,
oh,
Wizards.
Yeah.
Like, Wizards. They're just like, there's jazz
think,
all over the place.
I think I started watching that one day. Maybe I was at your house or something.
It could have been. We might have thrown it on. I had it on Netflix, and I think, yeah, I threw it on. You're like, what the hell is that?
It was, like, right before we fell asleep after a drunken bender or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Very good, you know, adult film.
Late-night movie.
Yeah, very good late-night movie. It's jazzy. You don't have to pay attention too much. You know, you can just come back to it, and everything just looks beautiful. You know, the animation with the live action.
I am really loading my queue up here with films I need to see.
That happens every cinema job.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, totally.
So we're on to Matt's number two.
My number two is also on probably my top 10 list as far as all-time movies.
Okay.
And one of my favorites growing up, Heavy Metal. Difficult to talk about animated films and not English.
I have never seen it. I know the picture of the DVD case so well because I see it constantly at the video store, but I never actually picked it up and gave it a spin.
Chuck, is this on your list?
You know, one of my guilty pleasures is like if I'm in the car and then all of a sudden like the loop comes and Sammy Hagar starts belting out Heavy Metal and I just kind of like roll the windows up and turn it up real loud and that was excellent.
This is one of those anthology kind of things where there's a bunch of different segments, kind of like Creepshow we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so good because if you don't like one segment, you're going to like the next one. And the one thing that connects them all is this glowing green orb called the Loch Nahr. So it's sort of science fiction, and this orb has usually generally a negative effect. Like in the first one, it opens up with I think the one it starts out with was the zombie one where B-52 crashes and all the soldiers come back and they're the undead, and it's like very, very like EC Comics scary kind of thing. And then there's this one with a taxi driver in the future, and the taxis fly around, and he's kind of gets sucked into this film noir sort of plot. And I'm not going to go through them all, but I'll tell you my favorites. Den. You can't not mention Den. It's a nerdy teenage kid who gets sucked into this alternate dimension where all of a sudden he's this hulking, like, Conan-type creature, but he keeps all his nerdy faculties, but all of a sudden, like, these scantily clad women are pretty much throwing themselves at him, and he's like, he's got what it takes now to do these chicks and do them right.
Yeah.
Which is everybody's fantasy.
Yeah.
Come on.
Scantily clad women is good in any animated film in that movie.
That's another thing about this movie. I mean, like, I probably saw this for the first time when I was, like, 12 or 13.
Right. And this was at the time where parents thought, it's an animated movie. It's good for kids.
Well, I don't...
We duped them.
I'll say my parents didn't rent this for me. I got it from a friend or something like that. Maybe it was on late night cable. I don't remember.
I remember being on late night cable.
It was.
Reason,
I think it was on HBO or something.
It could have been. It might even been on like... You know,
Cinemax. Like Skinemax, maybe.
We had... what did we have in Chicago? Channel 50 or Channel 60?
On TV, something strange like that.
Yeah, and they like, late night, it was like... They had some animation. Then I remember on like Saturday morning, sometimes it would just be like kung fu movies and like Asian robot movies and all that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, those
scrambled eggs for breakfast.
Yeah, I love those movies. Did you guys see this film?
No.
Heavy Metal?
Yeah, I
saw it like a while ago.
Do you remember the Stern one?
No idea. Go ahead.
Captain Stern?
Maybe.
Howard
yes,
Stern?
I do.
No,
yes.
The king of all media?
No, not Howard Stern. This is this guy, so he's in this one of the animated segments he's on.
How many times have you seen this?
Oh, I don't even know.
It's based off a comic book, right?
No, it's based off of a magazine.
Okay.
But I mean, maybe this is sort of a, we're splitting hairs here, because the magazine is comics.
Right.
Sequential art. But it's like beautifully done, painted usually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and also in the style of like Penthouse comics. It's often pretty graphic and sexual sometimes,
which was the style of the movie. It was different segments.
Yeah and it goes from horror to erotica to science fiction to fantasy, like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's all over the board, and every segment really works. It's fantastic. The Captain Stern segment is one of my favorites. And then it all culminates with this ending where the story kind of ties itself together with the common element of the Loch Nahr. And you can't not love this movie. And it's a great example of the rotoscope animation style, which, in case you don't know, is animation over actual live footage.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, this was probably the best animation they could do.
Wow.
Yeah, it was groundbreaking.
Always been on my list to check out. Just got bumped up higher, you know?
And a great soundtrack.
Yeah. That moves us to number two on my list, which is Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Love it.
This is 2006. It also won the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature that year. I love this movie.
Nick Park.
Go on.
Nick Park, the director, the animator.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. Good?
Oh, what?
I saw the one where they go to the moon and it's made of cheese. That's all I've seen.
That's
cheese.
One of the
Wallace and Gromit. We're going to get some cheese.
That's the one.
They're always talking about the cheese, Gromit. And, of course...
Well, Wallace is, anyway.
Yeah, Wallace is an inventor who is constantly making these absolutely bizarre inventions to catch pesky little, what would you say?
Penguins. And it depends.
It depends what the episode is. Sure. But in Curse of the Were-Rabbit, he's trying to...
It's the wrong trousers, Gromit.
That, I mean, the movie's... Oh, boy, it's fantastic. He's trying to catch, basically, a were-rabbit, a giant rabbit, who... He actually is.
Right, because he's also a gardener.
Right.
So this rabbit is coming in and digging up his carrots or whatever.
Carrots, yeah. And the town is about to have the big carrot festival, and they have judges of who's going to have the best carrot of the harvest.
Okay.
And now they got this were-rabbit going around eating everybody's carrots.
Right.
So there's obviously, you know, a call for Wallace and Gromit to come in and find out, you know, who...
Solve the mystery.
Yeah. Exactly.
Scooby-Doo.
It's very, very Scooby-Doo-ish.
Creative story. This is claymation. So
right.
This is qualified, again, by Matt saying that it is animated.
Absolutely. And you can see the fingerprints in the clay.
In the clay. I mean, this is painstakingly 250 people, I read, are working on these guys, moving them ever so slightly. Well-written, hilariously acted as far as the voice acting goes.
Yeah.
Great characters. If you haven't seen it, Wallace and Gromit, Curse of a Were-Rabbit.
I think I'm going to see this. It sounds good. It sounds okay.
He's won, like, I think that one won an Academy Award, too, for Best Animated Short.
Short, yeah.
A lot of shorts, right?
He won a lot of shorts. I want to say they won a few.
Like five.
Yeah.
It's
and
ridiculous.
So then finally they had the feature film, Wallace and Gromit. And it was like a shoo-in it was going to win because everybody loves these movies.
He also did Chicken Run.
He did Chicken Run.
I thought kind of sucked.
I didn't think it was that good either.
I saw Chicken Run. I remember it being good.
I was disappointed.
I thought it was like fun.
I mean, it was okay. It's in that same
Did Werewolf win the Academy Award, too?
Wallace and Gromit did. Chicken Run didn't, but Wallace and Gromit, check it out, Klein.
I will.
Huge fan.
I will.
All right, that brings us to your number one, Charles.
The greatest animated film of all time is Akira.
Akira!
Which I actually didn't see.
Akira!
I think Matt let me my first copy of Akira,
and
maybe.
You let me Akira.
I'm just going to say it's also my number one.
It is?
Yep.
That is awesome. And it appeared on my list at number seven. Now this is saying something. I mean, this is highly acclaimed.
This is saying that you should have had it higher on your list.
Exactly. I had it at number seven. You guys had it at number one apiece.
Why not the number one?
Well, it's tough to say why it wasn't, because I listed these other movies that I liked, you know.
You just liked them more. This is subjective.
It's not exactly. It's not that I didn't like Akira. It obviously made my list.
Right.
I don't know. Fantastic movie.
I think it's good. It's really weird. I hope they, you know, they talk about making it a live action movie.
Yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio, for the people who don't know it, is behind the project to get this into a live action movie.
And he would be great as Kaneda.
Right? Like the forehead. And
he kind of looks like Kaneda.
I think he would. He dyes hair black, and I think he'd be okay.
He's supposed to star in the movie, produce the movie, and he's like lining up the director for it. So we'll see.
It'd be great. You'd hope the great Katsuhiro Otomo would direct it.
But, nice Japanese accent.
Thank you very much.
Well done.
Practice that in the car.
Now, I know after
that was good. That was kind of like Alex Trebek there.
Thanks. After I saw the movie, I couldn't stop yelling, as I've been yelling this whole show, Akira!
Yeah. Well, awesome.
The thing for me was always Tetsuo, Kaneda, Tetsuo. Yeah. Oh. Whenever one would say one's name, the other one would have
yell
to say,
back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
It was call and response.
You know, and it's good. It's you know, it's got a lot. It's really creepy. It's really fun to watch. It's really.
It's out there.
It's out there. It's all I think it's all traditionally drawn. Yeah. I mean, if you liked Akira, there's another one. He did a follow-up. I came out maybe like 4 years ago. I'm not totally sure, but it's called Steam Boy.
Oh, I've seen
which
it.
Which is a little like, which is a little like Akira, where it's kind of hard to get into the plot because it's so obscure and sort of metaphysical and futuristic it's like fits so many genres. It's, you know, post-apocalypse. It's all sorts of things, sort of. And but Steam Boy was really good too. I mean,
well,
the animation
did that start as a graphic novel also?
I don't know,
because you know Akira was a manga,
right?
A manga, if you will, which are read from back to front.
What else you got to say about Akira there, Matt? I see a big sheet there.
Yeah, well, Akira. Well, first of all, the manga was, and I'm just gonna say manga. You know, I don't care if it's manga. For me, it's manga. And as a comic book fan,
ninja.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
As a comic book fan, I've seen this medium or particular subgenre of comics sort of start to encroach upon our shelf space in the bookstore. A couple years ago, you walk into the bookstore, you might be lucky to find one manga, and it was probably Akira, which is huge. It's like a phone book. But now you'd be lucky to find a few American graphic novels. Mm-hmm. It's all manga. So this has exploded. And I think part of the reason for that is probably, at least in part, because of this film. And what do I have to say about the film? I could talk for hours.
Yeah. You're talking about space on the shelf. You're talking about like comic space, right? Like just the comic space.
In the bookstore. Like when you walk into Barnes & Noble or Borders.
That's like half the section.
It's more than half.
Who's going to these corporate giants? Why don't you help out the little guy? Like... Well, Brainstorm on North Avenue.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Comic Vault.
Evil Squirrel. Listen, if we want to talk comic stores, that's a whole other episode.
But back to the movies, really quick. You've seen Akira multiple times.
Oh yeah, like 40 times.
I try to throw it on once a year.
And that might be the answer to why it landed at number 7 on my list and not higher. I've only seen it one time.
Oh, you got to watch it again.
And it made it number 7. I think if I watched it a few more times, because it is a movie, you're only going to appreciate it that much more the second and third time you watch it.
Correct.
Not only for the story, but for the animation, for everything about the movie. It's just so complex. So I think if I would have saw it maybe two or three times, maybe it's sitting at number 1. I don't know.
It's bizarre. It's highly creative, and it's just a blast to watch.
Well, we should give a brief synopsis. I think that's the one thing we didn't do about this movie. We're talking so highly of it.
Can you do it in like 4 sentences?
I can do it in maybe 5 sentences. So Neo Tokyo is what's left of Tokyo after World War III. And there's a group of children, basically a biker gang, and they're warring with another faction. It's the capsules versus the clowns. And the capsules are sort of our protagonists. Right. It's kind of it sets up like a West Side Story sort of setup. But then during a fight with the clowns, one of their members, a guy named Tetsuo Shima, has a run-in with an escaped patient who is afflicted with this disease/pseudo-power set called Akira.
Right.
And Akira was actually a person who exploded and pretty much wiped out the city, which we find out a little later, but that's not a secret. I'm not spoiling anything. This thing has been around for years and years. I won't go any further than that, other than to say Tetsuo starts dealing with transformation in himself, both mentally and physically, and he finds himself with these powers. He goes back to his gang, and Kaneda, who's his best friend, sort of best friend, but they also have a little bit of a rivalry, is forced to deal with this, try to save his gang, while the world is literally coming apart around them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well done.
Well done.
So that is on Charles Klein's number 1, Matt's number 1.
Yep.
Check it out, Akira. That leaves us with my number 1. It was mentioned earlier in Matt's list. He just briefed over it like it was nothing.
Number 7?
And here it is, my number 1. And you can make an argument that it's actually, in my opinion, one of the most important films in the past 10 years, and that is 1998. Toy Story, which was actually Pixar's first computer animated film, feature length.
I would agree with that.
And the reason why I say it's one of the most important film, and now Matt's agreeing with me.
Absolutely.
So this launched, if this movie bombs, maybe Pixar doesn't turn into the giant and produce all these films that we've come to love and know that computer animated can go feature length. This was a risk at the time. It was
huge risk.
Can they really do this for a full movie with Tom Hanks voicing it and Tim Allen, and the movie is going to work? It was a huge risk, and in my opinion, still the best Pixar movie out there today.
I don't know if I would still put it at the top. Well, it's definitely one of the best. If it's
best Pixar films?
Yeah, I don't know. Nemo is a little better for me.
Okay, now
I like Nemo a lot. I like
everything follows suit.
The other one, Bugs
everything
Life?
Follow suit from Toy Story 2, where they have the funny characters voiced. You know, if it's stuffed animals or toys in Toy Story to Fish and Nemo to different cars and Cars, they're always following that same type of formula that worked in Toy Story. And that's why, again, I listed it as such an important film.
Oh, it was a genre. It cracked it wide open.
Yeah. I mean, there were so many movies that followed. I mean, you saw, like, Bug's Life. You saw Ants. You saw,
they started coming.
Finding Nemo, Sharks. What was the shark? Shark Tale.
Yeah, Shark Tale. Anything that they could get their hands on that was, you know.
Well, and I don't even think all those were Pixar films.
No, like you said, it was a genre buster. It just opened it up.
And it was like, just try to flood the market with anything.
A B movie.
Yeah, and like studios who didn't have like a traditional animated studio like Disney
were
then putting out animated films, which really helped out.
It made them easier.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, DreamWorks Animation started after this film, and they ended up going
on
to do
Shrek great stuff.
Other interesting films. So Toy Story ushered in this whole mess that we're in right now with this computer animation that everybody's just having a lot of fun with.
Favorite one-liner from Toy Story.
Wow, putting me on the spot.
Always love to do that.
I love it's done by Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah. I'm thinking we might have the same one.
Yeah, and I can't think of it, but it's hilarious. Go ahead.
I think, well, wait. What are you looking at, you hockey puck?
There we go.
That was Cliff Clavin's voice from...
And he's in every Pixar movie. He pops up somewhere, even as a supporting role in WALL-E. They use him in every
He's their good
movie.
Luck charm.
He is.
Yeah.
So that concludes our top 10 favorite animated films. Well done, fellas. This was a great list.
It's a good jaw.
Yeah. Now we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to finish up with some movie trivia and some DVD reviews.
I like it. Can I hang around? I think
you're
I think
in the trivia.
Yeah,
hang around.
You're here. You're here.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, parking might have went up from $11 to about $50 for you at this point. But
and if we get to it, some of those urban legends too,
and some of those we will definitely touch on those.
Okay.
Yep. So you again are listening to Cinema Jaw, recorded at Matt's office. We'll be right back.
All right, we are back. You're listening to Cinema Jaw, recorded live for the internet this week at Matt's office. We're with Rye the Movie Guy.
Rye the Movie Guy, and?
My name is Charles Klein.
How are you guys doing? Special guest, Charlie Klein.
Special guest. One night only.
Now, when you have a special guest, you have an opportunity to do something rather unique to Cinema Jaw, and that is to play trivia.
Excellent.
On-the-spot trivia.
I'm ready.
Now, I know there's a lot of fans out there that are diehards for Matt's amazing talent at 6 Degrees, and we're going to skip it this week. Is that okay, Matt?
Yeah, that's cool. I'm excited to play trivia.
Okay, so we're going to do trivia. This is how it's going to work. We're going to go back and forth, first person to five.
Okay.
If there's a tie, we'll go to the sixth round.
And we did a practice one, and I have to say that these questions are kind of tough.
Yes, very tough. They have nothing to do with animation, which was our topic. Maybe they will.
Maybe
I'm not
they
saying
will.
They completely don't, but it's not in any way, shape, or form do I have any topic that these are covering. It's a wide range of movies.
You just grabbed a random stack of cards.
Exactly.
All right. And no blackberries.
No blackberries.
Right. This is on the fly.
Because Matt is Matt K and co-host of Cinema Jaw, he's going to have the opportunity to go first.
Fair enough.
Okay. Whatever.
And also, let me specify.
Shouldn't the guest go first? Isn't there some sort of
no. We don't treat our guests that good. Hey,
hospitality
you got free
thing
beer.
Going on?
Yeah,
here.
We got
actually,
some PBR.
You the beer.
Wait, I bring the beer and I go second on trivia.
So
fantastic show.
So,
can I come back next week?
I actually drove Rye here, too.
I did. What are you doing next
here.
Week,
it's
special
a great
guest?
Bought beer, and he does not get to go first on the trivia. So here it is. Also, if you
terrible.
Do not know the answer to the question, you can't steal. You get a new question all to yourself, Charles. Here we go.
No steals?
No steals.
Okay.
All right.
Let's do this.
Matt, to you.
All right.
Name the actor or actress who appeared in all of the following films. Alexandra.
This was the one we did in the practice round.
All right. Skip it.
He's trying to help you out.
Hey, it really wasn't, though. It really wasn't. It was a different one, but that's okay.
Well, then
that's
read
fine.
It.
No, skip it. That's fine. I heard to skip it.
All right, here we go. You ready?
Now I'm curious.
No, forget it, man. Here we go. What tagline from this 1979 film read, "These are the armies of the night. They are the 100,000 strong. They outnumber the cops 5-1. They could rule New York." What tagline from this 1979 film read, "These are the armies of the night. They are the 100,000 strong. They outnumber the cops 5-1. They could rule New York."
Oh, man. 1970? 1979. There's two films springing to mind. I'm going to go with Escape from New York. Was it the Warriors?
It was the Warriors.
God damn it!
Wow. I knew it was the Warriors, Charlie.
I said two films. I couldn't make up my mind.
I love the Warriors.
It was the
Come
Warriors.
Come out play.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Over to
Never
Charles.
Seen the Warriors. I've actually.
Oh, you gotta see the Warriors. Wow.
You know,
Jesus,
I was in a video store and they had it for like $3 and I almost picked it up. Probably
it's worth twice that easily.
It's
maybe I'll do that
collection.
Tomorrow.
I'll do it tomorrow. I watch it. It's a
he knows not in his head over there. You're a fan.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
It's
real
worth
pumped.
$6. That's definitely worth $6.
Okay.
Reno,
I'm picking it up tomorrow. Thanks, Reno.
Okay, here
Should've
we go.
Should have gone with my gut.
Good thing I didn't get that question.
Charles.
What?
What movie involves dead deer, live deer, a fat guy in a little coat, and Tommy Callahan?
Oh, jeez.
Jesus, come on.
Could I have the first question again? Tommy Boy.
Jeez, why don't you give him an easy one?
Well, I mean, I'm just going by the list.
You had the answer to the first one.
I know. I messed it up.
Okay,
fair enough. All right. This is a good
new round.
All right.
Round
this
two.
This is only appropriate. The title, 6 Degrees of Separation, helped give birth to a trivia game involving what actor?
Oh, Kevin Bacon.
There. Hey, we're fair on the easies. All right. All right. We're fair on the easies.
Well, did you know that one?
I did.
Okay. I think everybody knows that
yes,
one.
Yes, of course.
All right.
Reno, did you know the answer to that one? Okay.
Everybody knew that one. We are on the bottom of the second here to Charles.
Yes, Ryan.
Name the movie soundtrack that features "Why Does It Hurt So Bad" and "Exhale." Shoop, shoop.
The TLC song? Shoop?
No.
No. It's called "Exhale, Shoop, Shoop" in parentheses.
Shoop, shoop in parentheses. Yeah.
That's all the title of the song.
Oh, okay.
So you have
and that's
"Hurt
in the
So
title.
Bad,"
that's in
"Why
the
Does
title.
It Hurt So Bad," and "Exhale, Shoop, Shoop."
I got it if he doesn't.
Well, I told you there's no stealing, Matt.
I know, but I want to steal it anyway.
I can think of the actress who's in it.
Doesn't help you. I'm asking
it
for the movie.
It doesn't.
We're running out of time, my precious.
I don't know.
Can I guess?
I'll give it a stab. I have no idea. What's love got to do with it? I don't know.
Go ahead, Matt.
Mermaids.
No, both are wrong. Waiting to Exhale.
Ah, that's right. That's
all right, so we're tied up at one after two rounds. To Matt, what actor appeared in all of the following films? Armageddon, Pulp Fiction, and Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Armageddon, Pulp Fiction, and Beavis and Butthead Do America.
You got this. Come on.
I don't think Steve Buscemi was in Pulp Fiction, so I'm going to say... Was Steve Buscemi in Pulp Fiction?
Boy, is this tricky.
No steals, right?
No Ryan? Steals.
Bruce Willis.
Very good.
Wow, good for Matt. He thought about it there for a while. You were sweating that one out.
Because I can't remember Bruce Willis in Beavis and Butthead, man.
Oh, he was with Demi Moore, I believe, in the movie, too, in Beavis and Butthead, right?
I don't know, because I've never seen Beavis and Butthead.
Oh, great.
Really? I saw it in the theater.
Probably an honorable mention for my top animated films
of all
time.
Yeah, absolutely. The Rob Zombie.
Yes, the tripping part in the desert was excellent.
That was his film debut.
I would get stoned and just replay that. Constantly.
Hey.
Yeah. Jeez, it's a family show.
Okay.
The other what thing
is you can
you're drinking PBR.
The other thing too is no mention of a South Park movie in the animated features either. Or The Simpsons.
You know, I'm not a huge South Park fan.
Me neither.
People hang me out to dry on that one.
On the movie?
Just in general.
Okay. I don't watch it regularly, but I remember, man, those first two seasons were
It's
just...
funny. I don't dislike it, but I'm not like a huge fan. Like some people are like, South Park is all right, the best.
All right. I'm a fan.
Back to the game.
Fan.
Okay. Okay.
What's the score? What's the score?
It is 2-1. You have a chance to tie it here, Charles.
All right.
An ad for this 1988 film read, a romantic comedy about America's other favorite pastime. 1988 film, romantic comedy about America's other favorite pastime.
Fatal Attraction?
No.
Romantic comedy, Chuck.
Okay. I have a twisted view of romantic comedies.
That is it. It was Bull Durham. Bull Durham.
What's it? Wait. If it's the
that.
Other,
you see, it's
isn't others, that a baseball movie though?
It is.
That's
America's
the whole thing.
Pastime.
Yeah.
All right. Was, all right. Was, all right. There was a hint inside the question.
Like I can defend my answer or something. Go ahead.
All right. One tagline for this 1999 film read, "The sands will rise, the heavens will part, the power will be unleashed."
The Mummy.
Wow. 3-1. He's got a commanding lead.
Oh, all wait right. a sec. Hey, do you want to put some money on this?
All right, it's already gone. Go.
We made a bet, and we
so
shook.
We did.
Now
for
we're
parking.
Just playing to five, so we can keep going here.
The
don't
pressure's
worry.
Off now. Here
you
we go.
You need this one, though. Well, you don't want to fall too far behind. To Charles, who appeared in
yes,
all
Ryan.
The following movies? At First Sight, Quiz Show, and Mighty Aphrodite.
It's a woman. Name the three films again.
At First Sight, Quiz Show, and Mighty Aphrodite.
Could you use it in a
sentence? Was Ralph Fiennes in all these?
Is that your answer?
Yes.
Mira Savino.
Oh, you know, you kind of threw me off there. I said it was a woman. You held the whoopee cushion up.
Yeah.
That was my
he
first
was faking
guess.
You out.
God, I tell you.
It's a tough room here.
All right. Let's go with this one.
I got to pay for beer, and I get psyched out.
All right. What tagline for this film, Matt, read, "Sooner or later, a man who wears two faces forgets which one is real." Sooner or later, a man who wears two faces forgets which one is real.
Is there a year? Is there a year in the question?
No.
Okay,
there should be.
Sooner or later, a man who wears two faces forgets which one is real.
That's pretty broad.
I have no freaking clue. I mean, I want to say Batman is springing to mind, but that isn't it.
It's debatable.
One more time, read it.
Oh, Batman pretty much knows.
All right, last time, Matt. One tagline for this film read, "Sooner or later, a man who wears two faces forgets which one is real."
Bob Roberts.
Primal Fear.
Oh.
Yep.
How about
fantastic
Face-Off?
Movie, Ed Norton's.
Yeah, that was the tagline?
That was.
That, like, gave away the whole thing.
Now, talk about easy.
It did, yeah.
Name three actors,
that was,
Charles.
That was one of the taglines.
A consolation question.
Name three actors who have starred as Batman in major motion pictures
oh, Jesus.
After 1988.
What was
it, 88? It's still easy.
Val Kilmer, George Clooney, and Christian Bale.
Well done. Well done.
That's tough. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Hey.
Two to five. 3-2.
All right. Here we go. Matt, name the actor who appeared in all of the following films: Blow, Mystery Men, and Big Top Pee Wee. Blow, Mystery Men, and Big Top Pee Wee.
Paul Rubin.
Oh, good.
Who is
I
also
thought it was
going
to be a trick question. Yeah.
It is
not.
A trick question. Yeah. He's also known as Pee-wee Herman.
Tim Burton's Pee-wee Herman. That was Tim Burton's big film.
Was it his premiere?
No,
I don't think
that
it was
his
debut.
One. That led to Batman.
It definitely led to a lot of doors.
Led to Beetlejuice, and then open. Beetlejuice led to Batman.
Yeah.
Charles, it is 4-2. You are on the losing side right now, so you need this one.
Thanks,
and
Ryan.
And it's a difficult one. What animal does Indiana Jones hate?
Oh, it's snakes.
Why did it have to be snakes?
Why did it have to be snakes? All right, here we go.
Don't pick a hard one. Just read the top of the card.
Yeah, I'm reading, you know, as we go along here. What tagline for...
He's throwing cards away here.
What tagline for this film sequel read, "00, behave"?
Oh, dude, that's easy. Come on.
Very easy.
All right, you want a tougher one?
Yes.
Well, let me answer that one first, and then you know what? This won't be an official question. Okay. I'll give Chuck a boon here.
Yeah.
That was Austin Powers. Do I have to be specific?
Yes, of course.
To the Austin Powers film.
I forget what the second one wasn't Goldmember. That was the third one. Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, baby.
All right, we're going to give you one more for the win.
Terrible. Go ahead.
Name the actor who appeared in the following films: Parenthood, Little Buddha, and Point Break.
Oh, come on. That's Keanu Reeves.
Boy, it's getting even tougher. Here we go. Name the actor who appeared in all the following of these films.
Is this still to me?
It's the Hunger. It's like your go-to stop now.
The Hunger, The Man Who Fell to Earth, and Labyrinth.
The Hunger, The Man Who Fell to Earth, and Labyrinth?
I got that one.
It's David Bowie.
Oh, nice.
We have a winner here that was clearly now 5-3.
Good work, Kabindi.
Well done, Matt.
You answered like 12 questions. Thanks. I think it was like 14-3.
All right, Charles, for a consolation prize,
thanks.
Go with this one. Are you ready?
Okay.
One tagline for this film stated, if Nancy doesn't wake up screaming, she won't wake up at all.
Misery?
No.
Terrible.
Whoa, dude. Come on.
If Nancy doesn't wake up screaming,
she won't wake up at all.
If you don't answer this, let me, please.
It's Halloween
time. Don't give him any hints. You're giving him hints.
I'm not giving any hints.
I have no idea what that meant, except for the nightmare.
Nightmare on Elm Street, dude.
Tough ones.
All right.
So that was your consolation question.
Well, you know, based on your practice question, I didn't think I would do well at this, but
you did good, 5-2. You smoked me.
I didn't think you were going to do all that well either. I was actually predicting early on, put all your money on Charles Klein.
Well, hey.
Hey.
You should have. I would have taken that bet.
Yeah.
And I would have won.
So, Matt,
I wouldn't have, and I would have
trivia. And I believe every time we have a guest going forward, there'll be some type of trivia game.
I think everybody should challenge Matt from now on, and he should have a record going with every guest.
Well done. So, Matt is 1-0 against the guests.
Sweet.
That brings us to our DVD reviews. Matt, checking a movie out at home. I believe you saw something rather interesting.
I saw something that you recommended.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Tyson.
Great documentary.
Oh my God! Yeah, really good documentary. I cannot completely believe in the director's altruistic motivations for making this film. I do think he exploited Mike Tyson just a little bit. And there's a huge part of the Mike Tyson lore that is a huge part of our lives. Maybe not Charles Klein's life.
Because he was born so into the 80s.
Yeah, he was.
I remember Tyson and his minute and a half fights.
Did you own the original Nintendo?
I did. I did have the original Nintendo.
You did?
Yeah, it was pretty big.
Did you buy it at some type of retro store?
No, Toys R Us was huge. Toys R Us was where...
You actually... But it was Irene's, right? Your older sister?
No, it was mine. It was my Nintendo.
I don't want to give it a tough time.
Yeah, all right. Well, anyway, I can't believe they didn't even mention Mike Tyson's punch-out in this movie.
I agree. When I wrote the review for the movie on my blog, I had mentioned the code to get to Mike Tyson and talked, you know, in reference of how big that game was.
Yeah.
For people of our age, everybody went nuts with this game.
I never had the code to Tyson.
Really?
Never. Yeah, I had to play it like before school.
You obviously didn't subscribe to Nintendo Power magazine.
I did have Nintendo, but I don't know if I had that issue because I got them scarcely and not monthly.
This was in the days before the internet.
Yes.
And because Nintendo Power, there was a magazine before that.
No, Nintendo Power was the premier Nintendo.
That was the
magazine.
Only Nintendo magazine?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. But I remember playing that before going to school. Like,
it was actually one of the first video game magazines. I believe.
I love Nintendo Power. It was great.
Yeah.
Contra code was great.
Yeah. Up,
and
down,
it was Tyson,
down.
Dude. So
wait,
I used to play before. Who cares
about
the
what's the Contra code? What is the Konami code?
Up, down, down, left, left,
right,
right,
A, B, A, B,
B, A, B, A, select, start.
Yes. Well,
so, you know,
something like that.
So you'd play, I'd play Tyson before school, though. Like, waiting for the bus, like, just trying to beat Soda Popinski, you know? And, like, I didn't have the code.
Mr. Sandman.
I didn't have the
Soda
code, Popinski. So it pissed me off, you know?
King Hippo.
Oh, it was the worst.
You know what I loved about Soda Popinski? I'm sorry, am I cutting you off?
No, it's not a problem. Just frustrated now that I remember, like, just getting whooped, like, you know, by, oh, Jesus.
Mr. Sandman was
Mr. Sandman was tough with the swish. We had, the Glass Joe was awesome. You'd love to see him come up because you could just knock him out.
The second time we fought Don Flamenco was kind of tough.
Don
as well.
Flamenco was tough with the upper, he'd put his hand up,
yep.
Right?
Yeah,
he would.
And
the tiger guy?
Who's the guy with the turban who would spin around?
That was the tiger guy.
What was
he would spin around. I forget his name, but boy, he was difficult.
But you'd watch his belt, and it would shine, and you knew when he would punch.
Yeah.
We're getting way off topic here.
Back to Tyson, the documentary. But obviously, that game had a lot of influence on us.
As so here we are talking
Tyson,
about
the iconic figure he was at the time.
There's a special place in my heart. You know, I was mentioning before the show that I listened to a podcast called Radio Lab, and if you have a chance, do listen to it. It's fantastically amazing. It's by NPR. It's great. But they had a Tyson reference and it's a science show, mm-hmm. and they were just saying something, and they were making a reference to boxing, mm-hmm. you know, like it's like Tyson stopping a fight and starting to hug Evander Holyfield. And here we are in the latter part of the first decade of this century. Tyson hasn't fought a fight in just about 6 years or something, and in his last fight was a joke, mm-hmm. as we found out in this documentary.
And it's a sad ending to his career. That was an unbelievable moment, because I don't even, you know, follow his career up until that point. When I was watching the documentary, for me it was like, wow, this really got sad. He was down to fighting this guy, and
yeah.
how it ended with that whole emotional speech he gave in the ring.
Yeah. Did he fight Butterbean in the
No, in
the film?
Okay. He didn't, but he fought people that were way beneath him, although at the time they may have even been better than him,
yeah.
because he had fallen so far.
Yeah.
It's a great the thing that really makes Tyson work so well as a film is that he is amazingly honest when he speaks, and he's got this power of self-reflection, mm-hmm. that is pretty strange, because, you know, I don't know that Tyson is the most intelligent person on the planet. He's fairly smart guy, mm-hmm. at least reflective,
mm-hmm.
but his ability to be honest, when he got out of that ring in the last fight and he was just like, nah, I'm just kind of doing this for the paycheck. I don't think I'll be fighting again, you know?
Yeah.
And this isn't a spoiler, because anybody who saw that fight, it was like 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, but that he said that to the ring announcer,
yeah.
or the reporter.
Yeah. It was the reporter in the ring. And two, no one else talks in the documentary but Tyson, describing basically his whole career.
Very unusual format.
Very unusual format. And also, sort of like when it started, I thought, oh boy, I don't know. You know, Tyson's just going to be sort of bragging about his career. But again, he's just so honest that after a while he opens up and he's slowly talking about, one of my favorite parts is the first fight against Evander Holyfield, when he describes it as all of a sudden it was like bam, 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 bam. And I was thinking, what the fuck? This guy's beating my ass.
Yeah.
And it's just like he really talks about everything from the bad to the good and the way he interpreted it. And I think that's why we get more of an inside look at Mike Tyson, the man, than ever before.
It's a great movie. I love boxing. We should absolutely, absolutely recommend this movie,
yeah,
to
put
everyone.
We should put on the Buster Douglas fight and watch it right now.
Reno, what are you doing over there?
It's got
what you got going on, Reno?
You pulling up Tyson?
Now, another movie out on DVD that just came out on Tuesday is a film, Whatever Works, and it stars Larry David.
I love Larry David.
Okay. And Larry David is playing the Woody Allen.
I think he's racist.
The Woody Allen.
What?
Oh, boy. Okay.
No, I have no
before
idea.
We get to that. So Larry Allen. Look at me. Now you threw me off, Charles. Larry David is playing Woody Allen's character, had this been Woody Allen's movie 10 years earlier. It is written and directed by Woody Allen. And he wrote it maybe like the late 80s. It's very Woody Allen-esque about relationships in New York. An older guy meets a younger girl.
And I think he actually paralleled that in his HBO series.
Larry David?
Yeah, he pulled that into his
oh,
show.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now if you know Larry David and you think of like a young Woody Allen, both sort of,
sure,
you know,
the Hollywood Jew,
yeah,
the
neurotic.
Yeah.
And so it was a great fit for him to play sort of the Woody Allen character in a Woody Allen movie. But I guess the jokes are a little stale because you could sort of tell this was probably written a long time, you know, a little bit longer ago than like it was fresh in Woody Allen's mind. It's very Woody Allen-esque.
How many movies does he put out again, Woody Allen?
Sorry, two a year. Every single year, two a year.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Especially when you're Woody Allen, he's got to be doing like pretty big productions.
Yeah. And he does a lot of fast shoots from what I hear. He's very big into, here we go with it, bam, done. And,
yeah.
And the actors will be like, well, I sort of messed this part up. He's like, we got it. That was perfect. So, I don't know. I think it's his work schedule, and I think it just keeps him going at this point. So.
Yeah, you know, and you can't take anything away from him because he's a master.
He is. There's so few directors and writers that have multiple masterpieces in their filmography. Woody Allen's one of them.
What if Woody Allen and Larry David hooked up for a film?
I'm just telling you that they did. What are you talking about? Yeah.
This would be that film. I know. It's just like a question, and you're like, you should go see this movie.
Oh, so
you know what I mean?
That's like a tagline.
Yeah, you have like
right,
Seinfeld.
Okay,
you have
right,
like the.
I thought you were just out of it, Chuck. But
you know,
okay,
no,
yeah.
Not at all. So you know, you got Seinfeld, like the biggest TV show ever. Like Larry mm-hmm. David's involved, and his new HBO show.
Yeah,
I don't
Curb
get
Your
HBO.
Enthusiasm.
Curb Your Enthusiasm, which yeah. people love, and like Woody Allen, who's made like 742,000 movies. you know, like half of them are really good.
Yeah.
And then they like get together and.
I'm sensing you're not a big Woody Allen fan.
You know what? Ryan actually turned me on to Woody Allen since we're, you know, everybody's recommending movies here. He turned me on to like Annie Hall and like we, you know, I really enjoyed it. You know, my wife really enjoyed it. It was a good like date movie and Vicky Cristina Barcelona, like just a sexy movie. Like
Match
Point, really good. Match Point was like excellent and like he's getting like. It almost seems like he's hitting a stride. Like,
yeah,
it's just
lately
like,
he's knocked out some classics here.
Yeah, and then like you
deconstructing you Harry,
very good.
Yeah,
love that movie.
You get hit with a movie, and then he's like, "I got one now," and you're like, you're almost like, "I don't even I'm ready for
it." Yeah,
you know?
Deconstructing Harry, I watched. I'm trying to get my way through all of his movies, and I'm only like two away, and I saw Deconstructing Harry one of the last ones that I've visited, and. Very funny.
Oh,
great movie.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's kind of starting to finally turn over the acting reins to somebody else.
Yeah.
He's getting really old.
Also in Whatever Works, you have Evan Rachel Wood plays the young girl. Patricia Clarkson. Good movie. Check it out. It's not, like I say, it's not vintage Woody Allen, but I love anything Woody Allen does, and I basically check out all Woody Allen. So
your favorite director?
Recommend. He's my favorite, yeah.
That's a question for another podcast.
Because we're already leading into our last segment.
Rise Hidden Gem.
Ooh, Rise Hidden Gem.
No, the reason I was saying Larry, just real quick, the reason I said like Larry David, like racist and that thing, but like I was listening to a radio program and this radio DJ, like Michael Savage, was putting it out there like for 2 days of 6 hours of how Larry David is racist and it demeans the Jew.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like Seinfeld and Woody Allen. And I was like, come on, dude.
Yeah,
it's a fucking movie.
Yeah,
we'll have to research that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like something that's spewing out. I guess
it sounds like jealousy to me.
It sounds like there's another talk radio program other than Cinema Jaw that Charles is listening to.
I try to listen to Cinema Jaw all the time, but you know.
You try?
I listen to,
but you fail.
You know, when I try to listen to the episodes on
and
repeat.
Cinema Jaw never appear in the same sentence.
I've actually never heard an episode.
Let me quote Yoda here, Chuck.
Do or do not. There is no try.
I do not listen to Cinema Jaw.
So what you're saying is the X-Wing would be in the swamp at Dagobah.
All right, we're done.
Correct.
All right, Rise Hidden Gem we were on, and a movie I checked out. Very small.
And then I would lift it up.
Oh, boy. Very small documentary.
With some help.
That from Yoda. I actually picked up at... Roger Ebert has a film festival down in Champaign where he calls it Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. He tries to highlight films that just that got overlooked, and he just tries. Sometimes they're a year old, sometimes they're 10 years old, but a film that he thought didn't get the right viewing the first time it came around. And he had featured this film that only came out last year called Trouble the Water, and it's a documentary about Katrina.
Yeah, I read that on your blog.
Yeah.
Very intriguing.
And what's interesting is... These two people went down to Katrina after the disaster to start filming and making a documentary of how there's the lack of help and how everything went down, just cover the whole entire story. Well, while they were down there, they found two people who survived the hurricane but stayed in New Orleans. They had no means out. But she actually had a tape recorder and for some reason decided to basically make her own documentary, not knowing that this was going to eventually merge into a project with other filmmakers. She just had sort of a... you know, Sony video camera.
A home camcorder.
A home camera. And she said, hey, we got to stay here. We have no way out. These are rather, you know, poor people in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans that got hit extremely hard. And she's filming this, not knowing, like I say, that this is going to turn out as it does. And she films probably about maybe 2 hours worth of footage of while the storm's hitting. And you see at points the water starting to hit the street, then the levees broke, the water comes in, and at this point she's like moving up the stairs of her house with her family. She's got kids, she's got dogs that she leaves downstairs because she can't get them up, and there's bums that were out on the street. And she's filming this, and eventually she gets up to her attic because her house is completely underwater, and she's in her attic, and they're still trying to film, and they're down to just a bottle of water, some food, and hope to God the storm ends pretty soon and they can get help.
Did they try to break through the roof or
they
something?
They do break through the roof, yeah. They try breaking through the roof. And then through that, the next day, they're just flooded. I mean, the water's at that point up to the roof of the house.
Good Lord.
Wow.
And her husband is helping neighbors with, like, makeshift boats to get them out of places. And you realize that watching the two characters in the movie, they're poor as all can be. They're not very educated. It's actually tough to understand them talking. And I actually turned on the subtitles because I couldn't understand her, you know.
Dialect.
Exactly. She's, right. you know. And at the heart of it, though, is how much they do care about, you know, other people. And it's such a touching story. You know, we're a nation with a disaster there on in New Orleans and yeah. how these people came together. And then these filmmakers that they ran into, you mix that footage with footage they started to film after the storm and hit.
Sure.
All the way up until them relocating to Memphis and then what transpired with these people's lives and other people that got displaced from Katrina.
Yeah.
It's my hidden gem of the week, Trouble the Water.
I'd like to see it, you know. I mean, what a skid mark on America. That's not even a joke. I mean,
no.
it's a horrible, absolutely. Horrible chapter in our history, and it's definitely one that we should examine and try to learn from.
Yeah, in fact, probably the most powerful scene in the movie is they go back after the movie's basically getting ready to wrap up, and they drive by 1 year after the storm hit, and you'd swear it was 5 days ago. That's how bad the town still looked.
Yeah.
And this is more the poorer area of New Orleans, and they were highlighting how they went and fixed the French Quarter and got
yeah.
tourism
well,
back.
The French
which is
Quarter
good
didn't
because
even get
it didn't
hit.
Get hit that hard either. No. And but how these people are so neglected, you know.
Yeah. It's sad. You know, I actually was in New Orleans last summer, and I got to see firsthand. And what is it now? When did Katrina hit?
Katrina, 2006?
No.
Five, 2005 or 2006.
I think you're right. It was 05 or 6. Well, it
four
was,
years ago.
It was a number of years ago at this point. You know, I was in there. It was last summer, and it was amazing. The French Quarter, like you said, is fine in the casino, which is good to build the city back up again, mm-hmm. the tourism.
Get some money going.
But outside of that, when we were driving from the airport and to the airport, it's a ghost town. It's level.
New Orleans is real interesting. I drove down there like 7 years ago off of you know, right I-55, right down to Louisiana. It'll take you right there.
Great
yeah,
town.
Pre-Katrina.
Great drive right there.
And I just remember it being just such a different place. I mean, you literally, when you go into New Orleans, you cross over a bridge and you see people living in stilt houses and like taking like with their boats, and they actually live there, and it's just bizarre. So like, just to think of any flooding that would happen to this area, just being such like an aquatic town, I mean, it would just destroy like everything, and then have like a movie that comes out about it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's very good, and
The other interesting thing too is the country didn't just drop the ball on the rescue efforts that went towards it. It was the preparation to it. I mean, there were many reports talking about the levees, and they weren't in good standing order as far as if a storm hit. And then also what the film highlights is there was no public transportation or any type of mass transit to get people out who just couldn't afford to get out on their own. Because there's a lot of poor people in New Orleans who don't own cars, who
sure.
don't have another place to go.
Yeah, a lot of people in Chicago
and
don't
they
own
they
cars.
They were trapped
right,
there.
Exactly.
There was no way out. You know, there was nothing offered by the city like buses or the National Guard or some way to get some of the people out, knowing all that they knew going in. And
yeah.
Like, this could happen, but it probably won't.
Yeah.
And then it happened.
Yeah. So, very interesting film. Give it a spin. It's a documentary, Trouble the Water.
I like it. Writing it down.
I'll watch it.
And that concludes, I believe, everything we had to talk about on this fine, fine broadcast of Cinema Jock.
Well, do you want to talk about some of these urban legends?
Yes.
Let's go over it real quick. How are we doing with time, Reno?
One and a half.
We got 5 minutes, Matt. Go over. Just don't go into too much detail. Just talk about what they are and where to look for them in the movie.
I'll talk about this briefly. I think it'd be nice to end on a lighter note than Hurricane Katrina anyway. So
true.
All right. Well, you've all heard about the Munchkin hanging himself in the Wizard of Oz. That's not an animated film, but I thought I'd throw that in there. Not true, according to Snopes.
I believe it's just a light
stagehand
or something of that nature.
Supposedly, it's been proven to be totally not true.
So here's one I didn't know. The personality of the seven dwarfs in Snow White are supposed to represent the seven stages of cocaine addiction.
Come on.
I did not know that.
That might be a bit of a stretch. Some of these are a little bit more...
Came prevalent in the 30s, I think,
physical.
When that came out?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All right, cocaine actually came from Freud time.
Okay.
Anyway, clock cleaners, which is a Daffy Duck Donald Duck collaboration, if you will.
Okay.
Donald Duck can clearly be heard saying the words "fuck you," and this film came out in 1937.
I'm calling bogus on this one.
That
I'm
one is
the 30s, right?
That one's contestable. This next one is absolutely true, not contestable. I've seen it with my own two eyes. And I was saying to Reno before that it was Aristocats.
And Reno said bullshit.
No,
but go ahead.
It's actually The Rescuers with Zsa Zsa Gabor does the voice in of the mice in that one of the mice in that movie.
Yes.
Next.
This is all too true. Now, this is one of the good ones. There's a frame of porn spliced into the movie. And not in the movie like the whole movie goes away and then you see porn and then the movie comes back. Like, there's a window frame cut out that they're going by, and you see, like, a naked woman, like, a picture from, like, a like porn.
Now I'm totally renting it.
What's this movie called?
The Rescuers.
Write it down. Look at him. He's writing it down.
I think they've corrected it in subsequent releases, but if you get an old copy of it, I don't even know if it's the one on DVD, but if you get a VHS.
Sounds creepy. I get you. There's free
it's
porn on the internet.
It's extremely creepy.
I don't need to rent The Rescuers.
Well, here's the story. So
no stories. I told you. Give us another couple. We're running long.
Real quick. Disney thought they knew it was there, but didn't think it was a problem. So they left it in the original theatric release, but it was painted over for the first video release. The Little Mermaid. You've all heard about this one. The penis DVD cover.
Right.
And I actually owned this.
Mm-hmm.
The whole cover of the thing is basically a bunch of dildos.
Yeah, it's like the VHS copy with the...
Well, I had it even on DVD.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Now, I got the special edition 2-disc that just came out like a year or two ago. I bet it's
gone.
Different.
It's gone. Yeah.
It's the non-penis dildo edition.
Dang it.
And then there's something also about the priest in the marriage scene pops a boner, but that's contestable. Now, we already covered the Aladdin one.
You might just have
one.
A large
contestable.
Sack.
We've already covered the Aladdin one with all good kids take off their clothes. I've heard it. I'm curious to hear what other CinemaJaw listeners think. We talked about The Lion King briefly and the SEX. I'm not going to talk about Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but there's one in there. Let's see. What else? I mean, I think that's just about, that's the end of my list.
Jessica Rabbit was hot, though. Those are the
big ones.
The rule of thumb when you're watching an animated movie, watch it a little bit more closely.
Pay attention. They might just be slipping in some porn.
Something more than meets the eye. So, CinemaJaw 7, our first guest, Matt, what'd you think? It was fantastic, wasn't
Knocked
it?
Knocked it out of the park. Thank you so much, Charles.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll definitely have to have you back sometime
soon.
Please,
sometime not soon, because I'm not buying the beer.
Now
I lose a bet.
This whole night cost me.
Like,
I have one final question I wanted to ask to Charles.
Please.
Okay.
Put him on the spot.
Please.
Will you give me a ride home?
On the spot?
Only on one stipulation.
Oh, shit.
He's already given me a ride home, so.
I'll give you choices. You can either pay for parking.
Or?
Invite me back.
Or?
Don't have a third one.
You're invited back.
Yeah. It's getting late. Thanks, guys.
Fantastic. So, go ahead and wrap it up, Matt.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to CinemaJaw. We'll be back next week.
Thanks, Steve Reno.
Thank you, Reno. Thank you, the Original Mothers, even though we're not there this week. Thank you to Matt's fine office. Thanks to Charles Klein.
Oh, thank you, guys. You guys are great.
We'll see you next week. Hope you enjoy.